So here today we have Gadenter Rinpoche, the regent of Lama Tsongkhapa, and then the two churches, the hierarchs of Gelug tradition. And so there was a request made to me to award this, to have an award ceremony for this certificate. And so we, since we do not have much time, I said we should perhaps do this together while we are having this teaching. So those of you who have received the, your certificates, you have studied and worked hard for a long time, many years, by, as I said before, memorizing the root text, and then also memorize different commentaries. Those who are better at memorizing texts, they also have memorized the different commentaries. So you have studied these root texts and the commentaries word by word. And also, not only that, you have also done rigorous study and examination of these words that you have learned in the debate courtyard. As I said, we engage in the three processes of rejecting others' position, establishing one's own position, and the rebuttal of criticisms. And so I would like to congratulate you for having received your certificate. So what you have studied is Buddhism, this inner science of mind. So in order to do that in great detail, rigorously, you have used the Brahmana, the logic. And then some people also have studied the different, the Sanskrit and also Tibetan grammar and so forth in order to understand the Dharma well. So this certificate is not in order, not for you to gain some good salary or some a dry title, but it is meant for attaining Buddhahood. That so these texts that you have studied show the path to enlightenment, Buddhahood. And so, in Lam Rimchemo, Jerembuche has quoted this, quoted some lines from sutra, where so there are two pigeons have also come here to receive their certificates, perhaps. So it is above Tirumbuche, Garden Tirumbuche. So these teachings are the studies that you have done are meant for subduing one's mind to apply them in practice. Of course, it's very difficult right in the beginning to make transformation and subdue your mind, but you should gain understanding of the teachings and then reflect and give thought to them so that in gradually you would be able to reach a point where you feel that if you really put more effort, you can have the real experiences, the true experiences. And so so the purpose of your study on each of these different subjects is for that purpose. And so don't leave it just at the intellectual and understanding level, but actually integrate them within your mind to have the experience. And so we have role models like for Gelugpas, Jerembuche himself. So he says that in the beginning I searched much learning, I pursued much learning, and then in the middle all teachings dawned to me as instruction, personal instructions, and then finally I applied myself in practice day and night. And then the whole purpose of those three things that he did was, he said, I dedicate all these for the flourishing of the Dharma. And so, of course, we can also make these prayers in order to gain merit and wisdom. And so what we need is not just leave our prayers and the bodhicitta aspiration for reaching enlightenment alone, but also we need to engage in the practices of bodhisattvas. And therefore, don't leave your study and prayers just on that level of prayer and wish, but actually apply them to yourself. And so, in other words, if you could actually, if you could develop both the scriptural knowledge as well as experiential knowledge within yourself and combine them together, then you could, within yourself, then you could also share it. Oh, distorted. You could also share it with other people who take interest in Buddha Dharma all around the world these days. So even if you may be able to make a very slight contribution, you should whip up your courage to serve the Buddha Dharma for that. And so what this helps is to change people's outlook on life, and so that they become more open and relaxed in their mind, peace, and therefore it could help them to have a different outlook on their life, so that they are not depressed and go to the length of even committing suicide and so forth. And so, since you can see the real benefit of Buddha Dharma, if people could see this, then they will also find that this is because of Tibetan Buddhism that we have. And therefore, people would have admiration to the Buddha Dharma of the Tibetan tradition based on their own experience and reason. And therefore, please keep this in mind and do your best. So there used to be an elderly abbot of Dayang Monastery. So he was the one, the abbot of Dayang Monastery. When I first entered, got admission into some monasteries, and so he said that Dayang Monastery had these monks. If these monks of Dayang Monastery could have a very good and become very knowledgeable in the Dharma, then even 100 is a small number. But if we have someone who is a disgrace, then even one monk is too many. And so, in this you have now. Since you have now become a Gelug Geshe, having done your examination after having finished your studies, when someone says that this is a Gelug Geshe, you should be able to actually shine forth, to stand up to that measure. And also internally, you should also develop your own knowledge and experience. And so now we're doing the mandala offering. Please look on page number 70. Oh. Page 79. Second paragraph, Rinpoche, Pasan Geshin, the Jayapa. Mamma Baya Lodo, a color and boche, no more and boche, two more and boche, long board and boche, Dajo. Tajo Rinpoche, Mabun Rinpoche, Terchenpo Ipumba, Genma, Tenwama, Luama, Karama, Metama, Dobu, Tejama nye ma dawa rimboche do chale daranish. In order to receive the profound Mahayana teachings, I make this mandala offering to you, great master, Ngawonosa Tenzin Gyatso, who is ruler of the three worlds, the incomparable ruler of the three worlds. This ground anointed with perfume. Strewn with flowers. Adorned with Mount Meru. The four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this. As a Buddha field, and offer it up. To the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, I go for a refuge until I'm enlightened. Sangyen Dhobarasho, Siddhan Soye Chanam La, Chanjo Bardo Dane Yamsoch. Page 81, turn to page 81. So, I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Supreme Assembly. May the, by the accumulations I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Three times. So, gods, non-gods, humans, Kinaras and so forth, come and listen to the teaching here. So subdue your senses and listen to this sublime nectar dharma of the Buddha, which pacifies the negative emotions in the language of humans, gods, asuras, and so forth. I this teaching. I pay homage to the Gautama, who moved by his compassion, give us the teaching, the holy teaching, to rid us of all distorted views. Distorted, but... So in the Pratimoksha Sutra, so the Buddha's coming into the world and giving the teachings, and the Sangha being in harmony are the sources of happiness. And so the Nirmanakaya form of the Buddha, the manifestation form of the Buddha, comes at a certain time and period, one at a time in a certain specific place. And so the Shakyamuni Buddha appeared in India over 2,600 years ago. And what we have today is the 200 to 100 plus volumes of the teachings of the Buddha, and then also the teachings. So with regards to the teaching, the Buddha would not have any other than what we have in these volumes. And so the Buddha showed us a path leading to nirvana and the highest nirvana, omniscient state. And so having the Buddha appear in this... And so, as followers of the Buddha, we all say Buddham Sharanam Gacchami and so forth. So we are the follower of the same teacher as Buddhists. And so, in the past, when we lived in Tibet, we were not concerned, or we even didn't take interest in the people outside, in the outside world. But since coming to exile as refugees, we have had contact with the Buddhist countries, different Buddhist countries. So it's been 54 plus years, but still we have not made a fledged contact with these Buddhist countries. So we are still staying quite distant from one another in the countries where there is a Pali tradition. There is a very good practice of the monastic discipline, and therefore we also who have the same kind of Vinaya practice, if we could have a closer contact with them, it would be very good. I have been urging this to the monastic institutions. For example, in the case of the non-Buddhist traditions, we find mention in our own Tengyur texts, such as Tatov Samgraha by Shandarakshita, and also Madhyamaka Hridaya, the essence of middle way by Bhava Viveka, and its commentaries. Dharkajwala, we find mention of these philosophical traditions of non-Buddhist traditions. So now we are in the country where all these different traditions are still extant. And if we could invite the non-Buddhist scholars to our monasteries and have discussions with them, a dialogue with them, and with due respect to them, of course. I mean, this is something that we need to do. And so some time ago, we had non-Buddhist scholars, and there were some Jain scholars also in Varanasi, the Sarnath Tibetan University, for discussion. And so I still remember this. One of the Jain scholars said that the plants have minds, and he has many different reasonings to support that claim, and not only the one that we have. The only one that we usually say that these plants have mind because they sleep at night by folding their leaves. And so we need to have this kind of discussions with non-Buddhist traditions and the Buddhist traditions around the world. So I had some discussions with the religious department, the religion and cultural department of Tibetan CTA, Central Tibetan Administration, to invite Vinaya masters from Thailand, Burma, and Sri Lanka, and so forth, to have discussions. So otherwise, it seems like we just wait for their for them to take the initial step. So I think if we could really interact with them, I am sure we can learn a lot from them, and they also can learn from them. They also can learn from us. And so, in other words, through this kind of direct contact with them, we would be able to understand the commonality between our tradition and the Pali tradition in terms of the practices of the 37 harmonies and so forth. Otherwise, just it won't help just staying distant from each other, one another. So, as it's said in that prayer that I said earlier, the harmony of the Sangha is also a joy and happiness. So we could actually develop that through contact with them. Of course, as for me, I'm not allowed in the Buddhist countries like Thailand, Burma, and Sri Lanka, and so forth. The only country that I can go, the Buddhist country I can go, is Japan. So I usually take people as in the form of joke that I'm not allowed, I cannot go to these countries, Thailand, Burma, Sri Lanka, and other Buddhist countries except Japan. The reason why it is so is because I am a Buddhist. And so, of course, this actually hinges on a political matter, the fact that I'm not able to allow into these. And therefore, I have always thought if we could actually share our knowledge with these Buddhist traditions, the upholders of Vinaya and so forth from other countries. And so among the Tibetan Buddhist traditions, we have Sakya Dati Rinpoche, the leader who is heading or leading the Sakya tradition, and then Karmapa Rinpoche, the current Karmapa Rinpoche, and then Dugong Rinpoche. So all these Buddhist leaders, as well as leaders of the Burn tradition, of course, we have some meeting occasionally of these leaders of the different religious traditions, and have discussions amongst ourselves. So in Tibet, this didn't used to be a custom. I mean, except very occasionally, maybe the leaders join together. And so if we could have this kind of meetings of the leaders of the different religious Tibetan Buddhist traditions, including Burn, then, of course, it would be really, really helpful to one another. So I told you the story of Beno Rinpoche earlier, and then regarding Karmapa Rinpoche, he's really taking great interest in pursuing his study, and also particularly in the dialectical debate. So all the Tibetan Buddhist traditions should actually improve the quality of their learning and education. And so how to do that is, as I said one of the days, that the Dharma should not be tainted by superficial kind of practices of sutra and tantra, as Dungdang Tenpo Dome had said. And then, so after coming into exile, we have an established study of philosophy in the Namgyal Monastery, and then also the two tantric colleges of the Gelug tradition, Gyudo and Gyume. And then not only that, we also have begun study of Buddhist philosophy in the nunneries as well. And so Vinaya is something which is practiced, which is a common practice for all Buddhist traditions. So with regard to the Bhikshuni ordination, we have had lots of discussions so far, with a meeting of different Vinaya masters of different countries. So what we can do is the study of the Dharma. Of course, all the monastics, whether they are, you are a novice monk or nun, or bhikshu or bhikshuni, we all have the same right to study the Dharma. So whether we are able to make a decision about the ordination, bhikshuni ordination or not, we can, what our nuns can do is study the Buddhist scriptures. And so we have now decided to, for the nuns to have Geshe-ma examination. And many nunneries, when they, for example, gather for Jangunshu, where they have debate of the Brahmana text, and so we can see how the study and education standards are improving in the nunneries as well. And so because of the developments in the progressive developments in exile community, our exile community, then inside Tibet also the nunneries are taking interest to really pursue the study of classic texts. And so these are our progresses that we have made so far after coming into exile. As I said, so we need harmony amongst the different Buddhist traditions. I met somebody from Kham, and he told me that there's a very good harmony amongst the religious practitioners or followers of the different traditions in Tibet, in his area. And so in India also, we need that, and also those who live in foreign countries, and we should have the harmony amongst our different traditions. While creating harmony amongst different traditions, you should also be able to hold on to your own particular tradition well, without mixing up with others. And so if we can do that and be able to serve others with an intention, altruistic motivation, then it's very, very helpful to all. So I don't think this is there's anything wrong if I tell you this. Since I started receiving teaching from Kono Lama Rinpoche, Master Tenzin Gyaltsen, so after I have started receiving teaching, and then I also had the interest to receive teaching on the Tantra, Guhaya Garbha Tantra. So when I thought of receiving these teachings from Nyingma teachings and others, I actually reported them to my two late tutors, Gyabje Ling Rinpoche and Gyabje Chan Rinpoche, and I made them known about this. And then I told Gyabje Ling Rinpoche that I wanted to receive this teaching on Guhaya Garbha from Kuno Lama Rinpoche. And so Ling Rinpoche told me, for the time being, maybe it's better not to. It's because I was actually propitiating Dogyal at that time. And so Ling Rinpoche wasn't propitiating Dogyal at all. And so he was actually someone who held the... and so there was a talk about holding one's own lineage purely. And so because of that, Ling Rinpoche told me this, and then I couldn't go forward to receive the teaching on Guhaya Garbha. So I didn't have the opportunity. Then, and so during the 13th Dalai Lama's time, there was this Nyingma master, Derdun Lerablingba, or Derdun Soygel. And his Vajrakila, the teaching. And so there was a tradition in Namgya Monastery to do the ritual of this Vajrakila of the 13th Lerablingpa in Namgya Monastery since the time of the 13th Dalai Lama, who actually incepted it. And so since the tradition was already there in the Namgyal Monastery for this Vajrakilaya practice, but in order to do this kind of ritual, Drupchu, you need to have received, you should have received the initiation. And therefore we requested Kalu Rinpoche for this, for the Namgyal monks, and I didn't have the initiation. And but for the benefit of the Tibetan administration and the beings, we did this practice. So it's related to, so there was some prayer written by the Ling Rinpoche previous to my tutor. Therefore, I suggested if I could receive this teaching the initiation of the teaching of Vajrakilaya, the initiation. So Ling Rinpoche was in Dharamsala, and while Tejan Rinpoche was in Bodh Gaya. So in front of the statue of Wati Sangpo, Avalokiteshvara statue in my palace, and I invited Ling Rinpoche while I did this dough bowl divination in front of Jo Wati Sangpo, and whether I should receive this initiation of the Vajrakilaya or not. And actually, it came out that I should receive it. And so this was the first time I decided to receive the Vajrakilaya Nyingma initiation. And so I received this initiation from Dikwa Khenze Rinpoche. And then after receiving the initiation, I also did the necessary retreat on Vajrakilaya. So that was my first initiation from Nyingma master. And then gradually, I did also the dough bowl divination, whether to stop Dogyal practice myself or not. And it actually came out that I should stop it, and then I also tested whether I should stop it gradually. So it was around the Tibetan New Year time. So during the New Year time, we have this practice of doing on the third day of Losa to do Shugden Kangso practice on whether I should stop after this ritual or I should stop right away. So I actually tested through these about these three cases. And so what came out was to stop it right away. And so I stopped it, the practice of Dogyal myself, and I didn't actually go out and tell others about it yet. So around that time, I also received some letter from Gaden Changse Monastery. And so Gaden Changse had some problems because of some kind of a rift or disturbance or of Baldenhamo. And so this actually was made clear by, told to them by Dr. Tijan Rinpoche, that Hamo is called, there's some kind of unhappiness in, that you have actually caused to Hamo, the Baldenhamo. And so I'm not going to go into details here, we have no time. And so with regard to the Dobo divination that I have been doing, I actually did it since the time I took the responsibility, the temporal responsibility and spiritual, both the temporal and spiritual responsibility of Tibet. So whenever I have some important issue, I first discuss with others, and then if I could come to some conclusion, I did make that decision. But when there were cases where no discussion, no conclusions could be drawn through discussions and with others and through other means, then I finally relied on this Dobo divination. And so I did the divination of Dobo divination with regard to stopping Dogyal practice. So I have not done it just because of, I mean, whimsically, but cleverly, but this is how it happened. And therefore, I received the Vajrakilaya initiation from Digwa Khyentse Rinpoche, and after having received many teachings from Digwa Khyentse Rinpoche, then I also received teachings from Trulshig Rinpoche. And so, not only did I receive these teachings, initiations, and transmission, and so forth, but actually I studied the texts as well of the Nyingma tradition. And so, in the Guhya Samaja Tantra, for example, there's mention of the three empty states. And then in the Nyingma teaching also, they talk about the Rigpa. So when I actually compared these presentations from the different traditions, it was really helpful. So the four different empties that are taught in the Guhya Samaja Tantra and the explanations of Jorimbuche Rinpoche, it was really helpful in understanding the Ursel presentation or explanation of the clear light or luminous nature of the mind that are given in the Nyingma tradition and in vice versa. And so that's how I started receiving teachings on Nyingma tradition, and then I received teachings on Gagyu tradition, on the jewel ornament of liberation from Digwa Khyentse Rinpoche. If Golu Rinpoche were alive, then I would have received teachings from him. So I'm not someone who just talk about being non-sectarian, but actually I practice it myself. But being non-sectarian, I'm not someone who who is a foolish following this non-sectarian system foolishly, and so that I lose my own position. So with regard to the understanding of emptiness and dependent origination and the Madhyamaka view, I mean, there is no greater master in actually explicating the Madhyamaka view in great detail through reasoning and so forth than Je Rinpoche, Master Tsongkhapa. And so even Jo Mipham Rinpoche from the Nyingma tradition has praised Je Rinpoche for his teaching on the suchness of dependent origination or interdependent nature. So I referred earlier, I recounted the story of Dak Tsang Lo Tsawa having gained admiration of Je Tsongkhapa after having seen his explanations on Tantra. In the beginning, he was, of course, criticizing Tsongkhapa for his explanations. So some scholars, of course, say that there are lots of concoctions that Master Tsongkhapa has done in interpreting the different classic Indian texts. That's not the case, actually. What he has done is by bringing together all the different interpretations of Madhyamaka philosophy of Nagarjuna and then compared them and contrasted them and then made his conclusion. And so in this way, I follow the tradition of Master Tsongkhapa. But then I also am non-sectarian. So when we talk about holding on, upholding one's own lineage purely, and saying that we should not go to study or read the text of this other traditions, if you are Gelug or if you are Nyingma, you should not read and study texts of the Gelug and other traditions and so forth. I mean, does it really help or harm the Dharma? We have to really seriously think about it. There used to be a small Kagyu monastery, or Dagyu, perhaps it's Dargye monastery in Kham.
So,
so in another monastery, so Trinaran Bhushi told me this story. So the monks of this monastery, the Dargye Gomba, the Gelug monastery monks, went to the another monastery on where the monks have actually put up some kind of a canopy, top canopy on the top of the temple, and then these Gelug monks went to this other smaller monastery and actually destroyed that canopy that they had built. And later on, Tijan Rinpoche met Galu Rinpoche, and they talked about, in their conversation, it came out that actually that small monastery belongs to Galu Rinpoche himself. So these actually, being sectarian, we should see if they really, if it has really helped us or not. So if our own masters of the past actually came, were to appear before us and in such instances where one monastery destroys or someone else's canopy and also being involving and indulging in kind of a sectarian discrimination, what would they actually think? Then we, if we go back to Buddha himself, what would the Buddha actually think? And then today we have the discrimination from the Buddhists in Burma in towards Muslims. So how would we feel if how do we feel when we are actually when we see this kind of disharmony amongst religions, traditions? So they don't really, it doesn't really help at all, nobody. And therefore, it is very important for us to have harmony amongst all the different religious traditions. There are many Westerns, foreign people from foreign countries in large number, and also there are monastics from different monasteries and nunneries, and then from Ladakh and so forth, and also many lay people. And so harmony amongst the Sangha is a source of joy, and then harmony amongst all also is the source of happiness for us. So we all make prayer for the flourishing of the Dharma and for these the well-being of sentient beings. So while we can be non-sectarian, we should still hold our own lineage for personal, in terms of personal practice, we should hold to our own tradition well. We should not lose our track. And so in the past, somebody from the Kinnor came to me to request some teaching of Nyingma tradition, and I said, I don't have that transmission, and you are Kinnori, and therefore and you may go to Kunu Lama Rinpoche for this. And so after this, I thought, and I found that this person was a really sincere practitioner, a devoted practitioner, and therefore, since I lacked that transmission and the knowledge of that what that person wanted, and so I was quite unhappy and felt sad for not having been able to fulfill someone who came to me with great hope and his desire. As it is said in the prayer, the salutation verse from Abhisamaya Alamkara, where it said that and so in the scriptures it is said that the bodhisattvas should know all the different path systems and also develop these paths within themselves. And so it's quite strange to say that I'm a Gelugpa and therefore I must not actually study and follow the other traditions as well. So of course, if someone came to me, so I felt quite sad at that time, not being able to fulfill the wish of someone who came to me with great hope, because he was a Buddhist and I'm a Buddhist as well. And if some non-Buddhist person came to me for receiving some kind of a transmission of a non-Buddhist text, then I could say I'm not a non-Buddhist, so I don't really have that. So that's not difficult to say. But as a Buddhist, I really took great interest in being non-sectarian. So because of this non-sectarian within our tradition, within the context of our own traditions, therefore I also am very friendly with other religious traditions, and also tell the non-Buddhist traditions, I tell them that you also teach the love and kindness, I have the confidence to tell others this kind of thing, because I myself live that non-sectarian life. So otherwise we would have to say that if I were not being very sectarian, then I would have to also have to tell people that I'm being sectarian, therefore it's good for you also to be sectarian, but that's not what I do. And so today is an auspicious day, the death anniversary of Jamgon Lama Tsongkhapa. So in connection with this auspicious occasion of Jelama Tsongkhapa, I wanted to say the destiny fulfilled. Now, computer na yu su su su
su su
su su su in order to commemorate Rinpoche himself. So we need to know his own life and then follow in his footsteps. And so this text, this destiny fulfilled, Tsongkhapa's education as a song of realization, shows us how he has actually engaged in the study, reflection, practice of the Dharma.
world.
So it goes, Om, may we have happiness and excellences. So because in the English takes time to read, I'll just start reading. The eyes of the world to see higher realms of life and freedom of enlightenment, resting place for those tired from wandering in on the paths of cyclic existence, the root of happiness and excellence, my kind gurus and noble, the noble Lord's wisdom treasure, I bow at your feet. Together, a great store of merit and wisdom with little effort, rejoicing in virtues, is praised as best, particularly regarding the past virtues collected by oneself. If you develop without pride great joy in your virtues of the past, it is said these past virtues will increase even more. So this is regarding for his own purpose, Jerembuche wrote this. And then next, for the followers of Jerembuche himself, for posterity, he says, to accomplish the purpose of this statement by the Buddha, and also for the purpose of becoming a sincere practitioner, a follower of Jerembuche himself, he said this, and also because I see many other purposes as well, it would be good, O mind, to feel such joy. All this I dedicate for the spread of the Dhamma. I think this over. So first, I pursued much learning, and then in the middle, all teachings dawned to me as instruction, and then in the end, I practiced day and night, and then I dedicated all for the flourishing of the Dharma, thinking this over, how well this my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, noble Lord, wisdom treasure. So after meeting with Jerembuche, Chöje Dendrum Rinchen sent Jerembuche to central Tibet to pursue his studies, and actually he gave specific instructions as to how to go about with his studies and in writing. And so later on, Jerembuche had said he had actually forgotten some of them. And so what he did was he actually pursued this and studied all the different traditions that were extant at that time, Sakya, Kagyu, Nyingma, from many different masters of the time, he received teachings and initiations and so forth. So that is the meaning of engaged in much learning, extensive learning first, and then in the middle, all these teachings dawned to me as personal instruction, and not leaving whatever he has studied as just intellectual understanding, but he actually integrated the teachings within himself, and then found the teachings. So the meaning of the dawning, all instructions dawning as personal instructions, can happen if you are actually able to see the different texts in perspective, put yourself in perspective by comparing and contrasting them, and then being able to draw the conclusion yourself. And so beginning with the collected topics upwards, you should do that. So thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, noble Lord, wisdom treasure. Then quest for extensive learning, with the darkness of confusion concerning the points to adopt or reject, not dispelled by the lamp of perfect learning, if you do not know even the path, what need to speak of entering the supreme city of liberation, therefore not content with the partial or superficial understanding of the treatises of the invincible Lord of the Dharma, Ajita, and those of great sages, widely renowned in India as the six ornaments, the two supreme ones, I studied them all in great detail. And so we have texts like the Maitreya's five texts, and also the six different collections of reasoning by Nagarjuna and so forth. He says that he has studied all of them, and not just roughly studying, reading them, but he says he had actually studied them in great detail. He's not boasting about it. So if you actually read his Jerembuche's writings, you can find this to be true. For example, in the case of his commentary on Abhisamaya Alamkara, the rosary garland, he actually read all the 21 different commentaries of Indian commentaries, and then he wrote his this garland of rosary, golden rosary. And then he touches on the difficult points in the Madhyamaka texts clarified them. So thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Lord, noble Lord, wisdom treasure. Especially for an ordinary person, the sole way to determine this precise reality of things are the treatises of not a valid reasoning. So with much effort, I stated dear difficult points again and again, thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, noble Lord, wisdom treasure. So this shows his study of the Pramana text on logic and epistemology. So I usually tell people that Buddhism is really following this finding facts through finding truth through facts. So the higher rebirths and liberation and so forth are said to be the result of a valid knowledge. And so with some kind of a doubt remaining in your mind, or some kind of ignorance, darkness of ignorance shrouding your mind, you cannot actually see the reasons that proves these. And so by understanding the law of causality, you should overcome the ignorance about law of causality and so forth. And then apply these teachings within yourself and progress on the path. And therefore, we need to develop this valid knowledge, understanding within yourself through by gaining conviction in them, which comes through our analysis. Though I toiled in the treatises of the Sutra and Tantra, when practicing and expounding their profound meaning, I found my view had not advanced far beyond those who had learned nothing and who knew even less. So then I studied thoroughly all the essential keys to induce the correct view through the subtle dialectical reasoning that distinguishes the profound, especially the treatises of Nagarjuna, and resolved all my doubts completely. So some people talk about thoughtlessness. So, of course, when we talk about thoughtlessness, I mean, there are many different shades of meaning to this that comes in the context of sutra, as well as tantra, the lower tantras, and then the highest yoga tantra. There are different ways of understanding the same word. And within the highest yoga tantra, also there is difference in understanding this in the mother tantra or father tantras. And so without knowing the details, the distinctions between these different shades of meaning, if you just say you have to stop thought, and then that doesn't really help. So if you just have to stop thinking, then there's no difference between the learned ones and the ignorant people. So he said, I studied this, and that distinction is profound, and especially in the Sutra Nagarjuna, it resolved all my doubts completely. I think it's over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Lord, noble Lord, treasure, wisdom treasure. There are two vehicles to travel to perfect enlightenment, the profound Vajra vehicle and the perfection vehicle. Sacred mantra is said to be much superior to the perfection vehicle. This is as well known as the sun and the moon. While accepting these words to be true, there are some who do not ask, what is the profound vehicle? And yet assume the mental of scholars. If such people are supposed to be intelligent, then where are the dull-witted? How extraordinary that anyone should neglect an unexalted path so difficult to meet. Therefore, I entered the supreme vehicle of the victorious One, the Vajra vehicle, even rarer than the Buddha's, a profound treasury of true spiritual feats. And I studied long with much effort, thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Noble Lord, Wisdom Treasure. Not knowing the paths of the three lower tantras and deciding the highest yoga tantra is the supreme of all classes of tantra is just an assertion. Realizing this, I familiarized myself both generally and specifically with the three genres of action tantra, such as general secret tantra, true fulfillment, the tantra requested by Subahu, and later concentration, thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Lord, Noble Lord, Wisdom Treasure. Within the second class of tantra, performance tantra, I studied the main tantra, manifest enlightenment of Virachana, and ascertained thoroughly the precise orientation of all perfect tantras, thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Noble Lord, Wisdom Treasure. And so with regard to the manifest enlightenment of Virachana, which is the tantra of the performance tantra, Jerem Buji has made something in Ganden or somewhere, considering to be important. Within the third class of tantra, yoga tantra, I studied the main tantras, the glorious compendium of reality, the explanatory tantras such as Vajra Pinnacle, and enjoyed the feast of yoga tantra. I think it is over how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Noble Lord, Vishnu Treasure. Within the fourth class of tantra, the highest yoga tantra, I studied the root and explanatory tantras and others, renowned as the sun and the moon among the Indian sages, the secret community, a father tantra, and yogini tantras of Vajra, laughter, and supreme bliss. And so, with regard to the commentaries on Guhyasamaja Tantra, Jerem Buji has written something like five different texts. And then, with regard to Mother Tantra, there is also a text by Master Tsongkhapa. And Kidru Rinpoche also has written Kedrup Sangzu, the secret treasure of the Khandru Sangzu, the Dakinis, which is a very good text. So Jerem Buji himself has said that with regard to He Vajra Tantra, the upholders of this particular tantra, the past masters, have written very well commentaries, very good, excellent commentaries, and so there was nothing that he could write more. And so he didn't write particularly on He Vajra Tantra. I also studied the Wheel of Tantra, a Wheel of Time Tantra, unique amongst tantras, an original system of explanation different from the other sutras and tantras, along with its illuminating exegesis, the stainless light. Thinking this over, how well my destiny fulfilled. Thank you very much, Noble Lord, Wisdom Treasure. This is the first chapter telling how I first sought extensive learning. Next, all teachings dawn as spiritual instruction. Then, with a firm, intense, and enduring faith in Manjuku, which is supreme in banishing the darkness from the disciples' minds, I prayed in order that all scripture might dawn as spiritual instruction and strove to fulfill all the necessary conditions. And so, Jerem Buche, of course, had done the practice of purifying and negativities and accumulating merit before, but particularly he, after receiving Manjushri's instructions to go and live as hermit, he did it, this practice particularly, very specific places, like Urgachet and so forth. And thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Noble Lord, Wisdom Church. Striving thus, I found a special conviction in the stages of the path to enlightenment transmitted from Nagarjuna and Sangha, and hence the perfection of wisdom, the best scriptures on the profound dawn upon me as spiritual instruction. So perhaps this was talking about when he was in Jang Rading. Thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Noble Lord, Wisdom Treasure. In this northern land, there are many, regardless of whether they have studied the text on etymology or not, who say there is no graduated practice of the path leading to enlightenment in the compendium of valid cognition and the corpus of seven treatises. So here, this Brahmana Samuchaya is mentioned, and then the seven treatises refer to Dharmakirti's texts on Pramana. So these are the texts on pramana, epistemology and logic. They're the king of texts on the subject. But they also take as authority the permission granted by Manjushri Dignaka when he explains and write this book. In the future, it will become the eye for all wandering beings. Seeing this to be completely illogical, I especially looked into this and found that Brahman Samuchaya's opening homage is established by the Brahman Siddhi chapter of Dhammakirti's Brahmanavartika through the forward and reverse logical procedures. Yes, proving Bhagwan Buddha to be an authoritative master for those seeking liberation. From this, I found a deep conviction that his teaching alone is the ford for those seeking total freedom. As such, all the essential points gathered as one of the paths of the two vehicles unfolded through the path of reasoning, and I found a great special, very special joy. I think it is over. How well my definite fulfillment. Thank you very much, Noble Lord Wisdom Treasure. Then I brought together Bodhisattva level, the ornament of Sridhara Alamkaran, with much hard and proper work. All the treatises of the invincible Lord Maitreya and those following him arose as spiritual instruction. Thinking is over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Noble Lord, Wisdom Treasure, Manjushri. Relying especially on the compendium of practices, Shiksha Samuchaya, which grants certainty in all the points of the path with great its graded arrangement of the vast and profound teachings. And I saw clearly the many points of the Supreme Treatise of Nagarjuna, such as the Compendium of Sutras, as the stages of practice. So many texts by Nagarjuna refers perhaps to his Ratnavali and also the Dharmadhatu Stova and so forth. So thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Noble Lord, with some treasure. Then, relying on Buddha Guhaya's well-explained practical instructions on the Dhyanottara and Vedachana, Sambodhi, all the points of the path don't well as spiritual instruction. Thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Noble Lord, with some treasure. Seeing how the essentials of the path of the Sri of Samgraha are incorporated in the three samadhis was not that hard, but for the difficult way to meditate on the profound. In that path, I relied on the great Pandita Buddha Guhaya's great correct explanation, which combined the root explanatory and subsidiary yoga tantras, and also on the stages of the meditations, proper explanations of the profound perfect practices of three tantras classes, and the darkness in my mind was dispelled. I think it's over. And so he's also referring to the stages of meditation, but Kamalashila, which actually dispels our darkness about the concentration, developing single body concentration, and the Vipassana. The ultimate of all well-spoken teachings of the mighty sage is the glorious highest yoga tantra, of which the greatest and the most profound is the king of tantras, glorious Guru Samaja. On this, the supreme philosopher Nagarjuna said, the essentials of the paths are sealed in the root tantra. The essentials of the path are sealed in the root tantra by the six limits and four ways, and thus they must be understood through the master's instructions following the explanatory tantras. And acknowledging this was crucial, I acquainted myself for a long time with even the smallest text of the noble Nagarjuna's tradition of Guhya Samaja, the ultimate core instructions contained in the concise sadhana, the lamp, which was written by Martin Nagarjuna, and the lamp for integrated path, written by Aryadeva, the stages of presentation, and so by Nagabodhi. Also, relying on the lamp like illuminator, which is the bright lamp by Chandrakirti of the root tantras, and combining them with the five great explanatory tantras, I studied with enormous effort and discovered the two stages of Guhya Samaja in general, and especially all the essentials of the perfection stage. Thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Noble Lord Wisdom Treasure. Through this, the essential points of many tantras such as Samvara, Hevajra, and Kalachakra dawned upon me as spiritual instructions. I have explained these as well. I just show a door for the discerning. Thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Noble Lord Wisdom Treasure. This is the second chapter on the the middle period, when all scripture traditions arose as scripture instructions, and then constant practice and total dedication, having thus become a treasure of instructions, I trained to familiarize myself with the path comprising the common path and the exclusive path with its two stages, the two Mahayana systems. Thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thinking this, thank you very much, Noble Lord, for some treasure. Thinking this over, how well. It is said that the Ganges-like prayers of the Bodhisattvas are all contained within the prayer that upholds the holy Dhamma. Thus, whatever virtue I accumulated was dedicated to the spread of the sage's teaching. Thinking this over, how well my destiny is fulfilled. Thank you very much, Noble Lord, Wisdom Treasure. This is the third chapter, how at the end I practiced day and night and dedicated all virtues to spread of the Dharma. In order to increase my own virtue enormously and to show properly the correct way to the many fortunate beings who possess a discerning mind, I have written this account on my education. By the store of merit attained through this process, may all beings through this same procedure, maintain the unexcelled contact of the Buddha and enter the path that pleases the victorious ones. The colophon says, written by the Eastern monk Tsongkhapa Losan Thakpa at the Triumph of Virtue Monastery and on the Great Namit Mountain with Kashyapa Rinchen Pelle as scribe. And so we should all strive hard in order to follow this the path or in the footsteps of Tsongkhapa through our study practice. So let's turn to the text now.
The page number 73, training the mind on the stages of the path of the great beings. Even if you attain simple liberation upon the Buddha's origin, you will have to enter the great vehicle. Thus, inspired by pure altruism, enter the vehicle taught by the conqueror Shakyamuni out of compassion. It is the source of all goodness, your own and others, and the soul path traveled by all wise beings. By working for others' welfare, you achieve your own naturally. Wondrous, entering the sublime path is a sublime achievement. The spirit of enlightenment is the gateway to the great vehicle, for even if you have nothing else, with it you become a Mahayanist. How to develop that aspiration? We are on page number 74. The actual steps to the training. From the three, meditating recognition of your mothers, recalling their kindness and wishing to repay it. The attitude of affectionate cherishing of all sentient beings arises. From this arises the love that holds them dear to the heart like one's children. And love generates compassion. Although listeners and solitary realizers have the four immeasurables, they do not take responsibility for ending all beings' suffering. Those who affirm, I shall achieve the happiness and so on for my mothers, these sublime heroes, with their superior intention, take this responsibility. Compassion initiates this, and from it the spirit of enlightenment is born. So the book now I'm reading is the New and the Revised Edition. It is on page number 75. But if you happen to have the old edition, the previous edition is on page number 124. So the new edition, please turn over to page number 75. Producing the view of them as deer. As you have been wandering in beginningless rebirths, there is no kind of womb in which you have never been born. Thus it is established that all sentient beings have been your mothers. At the time they care for you dearly as your mother of this life. What could be worse than not wishing to repay their kindness? Actually cultivating the attitude, meditating on love, compassion, the superior intention, visualizing sentient beings deprived of happiness, meditate on love, the wish that they find happiness, and so on. For its benefits, refer to the sutra and to the precious garland. Visualizing sentient beings tormented by the three kinds of suffering, meditate on compassion, the wish that they be free of their suffering, and so on. As for the order of the meditation, start with your loved ones. Then reflect on sentient beings deprived of happiness and afflicted with suffering, and train in the superior intention, taking on the responsibility of freeing them. Cultivating concern for enlightenment, seeing the need to attain enlightenment for others' sake, reflect well on the Buddha's good qualities, which inspires the aspiration to attain them. Identifying the spirit of enlightenment, the result of the training, having ascertained that omniscience is necessary for your sake as well, and this way cultivated both aspirations of this state of mind. Commit yourself to attaining complete enlightenment for other sakes. So the Bodhisattva vows can be taken even before the statues, even before the images of Buddhas, but you can also take it through your teachers. The training based on the works of Shantideva, since cherishing yourself is the due to all misery, and cherishing others is the source of all goodness. Cease cherishing yourself and neglecting others, and reverse the objects of the two attitudes. Do it yourself entirely, even your breath, to the welfare of others. The way to maintain it through a ritual, we are on page number 76. Keeping what you have acquired from decline. So training in the causes for maintaining the spirit of enlightenment in this life, training in the causes that prevent its loss in other lives. You become worthy of the homage of gods and man. You are watched over by twice as many protectors as those of a universal sovereign. Practicing mantra confers the two kinds of attainments. After reflecting on the question for many years, the Buddha saw that this was most beneficial. If the merit of it were to materialize, it will fill the sky and beyond. Since its decline means wandering in lower realms for a long time, do not abandon it even for an instant, but maintain it by generating it six times daily. Training in the causes that prevent its loss in other lives. Deceiving with lies preceptors, the helpful and objects of offering, making others regret the virtue they have accomplished when they have no regrets. Speaking unpleasantly of bodhisattvas within their hearing, being deceitful and hypocritical for no good reason, using tactics to conceal your faults. Contrary to these four are the four white actions, abstaining from lying and maintaining an honest disposition, consciously regarding bodhisattvas as your teachers. When Vaishnava 77, encouraging sentient beings so inclined to develop the aspiration to complete enlightenment. These eight are the causes of not losing the supreme aspiration in the future. The way to restore it if it declines, being able to take it again if it declines, is unique to this vehicle. Although you break your vow of engagement, as long as you maintain aspirational bodhicitta, acting contrary to any other bodhisattva precepts, it is a fault that weakens your commitment to virtue in the interim. Having developed the spirit of enlightenment, how to train in bodhisattva practice has three. The first one, just producing aspirational bodhicitta carries great benefits, but making it the core of your practice is far better. Its actual practice consists of keeping the vows and training in the precepts. Buddhahood will not be achieved when method and wisdom are separated. Train in unmistaking and complete method and wisdom inseparably. The method in question is the spirit of enlightenment explained earlier, and wisdom is the view that has mastered thusness. Meditating on emptiness while maintaining the influence of the spirit of enlightenment and practicing generosity and so on while maintaining the influence of wisdom is what is meant by practicing method and wisdom inseparably. Some assert that once by means of discriminating wisdom you have established reality, you should then put aside this view and thinking of nothing, and that this one-pointed focus is the meditation of reality. Then when asked what they believe others maintain, you are not to establish the meaning by correct analysis, nor concentrate on its simple absorption. Placing the mind in a state free of analysis and thinking about nothing is best. If this mental state is present, all kinds of wrongdoing can serve as causes of Buddhahood. We are on page number 78. Well then, what do you find wrong with meditating analytically? By means of discriminating wisdom, all conceptions that think this is this are instances of grasping at the self of objects conceiving the three spheres. That is why one fails to overcome the causes of samsara. Then awareness of refuge, of the qualities of the spiritual master, of freedom and fortune. Recollection of death and of the lower realm sufferings, love, compassion, cultivating the spirit of enlightenment, and training in the precepts of engaged bodhicitta. Since they must all be ascertained individually, you dare say are obstructions to omniscience. If this were the case, since meditating more and more on the selflessness of objects would only serve to weaken these qualities, refuge and so forth, would not view and conduct become as compatible as hot and cold? If this cannot cause Buddhahood, it is strange indeed that, according to your view, mistakes like anger and so forth could cause Buddhahood. If you assert that this is like armor practice, all in one, and that this includes all the rest, then why could not an act of generosity like with cow dung and urine and others mentioned be enough on their own as well? This is just verbiage and falsehood. What arguments do you have to prove the validity of your assertions? Once the base, the two truths, is formlessly established, then even a partial explanation allows those with broad intelligence to understand the method and wisdom of the path and their results, the two kayas. Then I take refuge in those possessed of objectless compassion, who decisively teach existence, lack of inherent nature, without contradicting cause and effect. We're on page number 79. Maintaining this, how to train in the precepts, has three. All the precepts are included in the six perfections. For the six perfections, their number is ascertained from six angles. As the three different kinds of the vows need to be taken in order, so similarly, the three different vows once taken by a monk reside within the mental continuum of those practitioners of the monks separately. For the six perfections, their number is certain from six angles. Their number is certain in terms of higher rebirth, accomplishing the two goals, fulfilling others' goals, and compassing the great vehicle. For different kinds of methods, in terms of the three trainings, their number is certain as well. With an excellent basis while abiding in the great vehicle, whatever goals you seek, yours or others, whatever the various methods you use, and whatever the precepts you practice, they are included in the six perfections. Among the six perfections, the subsequent one arises based on the preceding one, and since each is superior to the preceding one, and the preceding one coarser than the subsequent one, the author is certain. We are on page number 80. the virtuous intention to give and the intention when engaging in physical or verbal giving, which is motivated by that virtue, is the nature of generosity. Its divisions are giving the teaching and so on. The best is to generate the heartfelt thought to give all your possessions to others. Simply overcoming your miserliness is not the perfection of generosity. Understand that when the intention to give is complete, the perfection of generosity is complete. When you give your body, possessions, and the virtue produced in the three times and involve all the six perfections, you fulfill all short and long-term needs. Mainly in terms of the ethical discipline of abstention, the intention to give of return from harming others and its basis is the nature of ethical discipline. It has three divisions. The vow of personal liberation within bodhisattva's minds is the vow of ethical discipline, not the bodhisattva vow. If the bodhisattva vow of abstention degenerates, by that fact it is taught that all vows degenerate. The precepts to which you have committed yourself, even the subtlest without exception, are to be kept pure. Those with pure ethical discipline among sentient beings are as grand as mountains. Without force or coercion, they can tame sentient beings. Their fullness, adorned thereby, etc., the benefits are many. We are in page number 82. Wisdom observes and examines object and is the state of mind that analyzes phenomena thoroughly. Realization of the ultimate and the conventional and the wisdom of helping sentient beings are taught to be its three divisions. Wisdom is the root of visible and invisible good qualities. I'm moving to the next para. Next outline, training in the four means of gathering that ripen others' mindstream, giving necessities, even your life and so on, without hesitation. Pleasant speech is teaching disciples the six perfections. Implementation of the aims is inciting them to practice what you have taught them. Consistency with the aims is acting in harmony with what you have taught others. Strive at these key elements to measure others' minds. Giving necessities gladden them and they listen to your words. Then pleasant speech dispels their ignorance and doubts. Encouraging implementation of the aims inspire them to practice. Consistency with the aims is harmonizing your practice with others who then see you as a model. Regarding the practice of six perfections, both in meditation and subsequently, serenity, insight, and certain forbearance of profound dharma are practiced in absorption, generosity, ethical discipline, part of patience, part of concentration and wisdom are practiced subsequent to absorption. Before taking the vows of engagement, practice with great delight in contact and gain self-assurance. Then when you take them with the ritual, they will be very stable. This completes the clear explanation of the cultivation of aspirational bodhicitta and of training the conduct of congregation in general. So in page number 83, how to train in the last perfection in particular has six. And the first one, the benefits of meditating serenity and insight, one-pointed mind on a virtuous object, and even the premises of subtle wisdom analyzing discriminately, are classified respectively as serenity and insight. The imprints, whatever they may be, that generate more and more incorrect perceptions in the mind, and the states of mind that activate these imprints, wrong clinging to objects, are known as dysfunctional tendencies and bondage to signs. They are eliminated by meditating serenity and insight. The second outline. Since the good qualities of concentration and wisdom, whatever they may be, are all qualities of serenity and insight, by practicing both serenity and insight, which encompasses all meditative states, you achieve the root of the three vehicles' good qualities taught by the conqueror. Third outline. Once distraction towards the exterior has been appeased, the non-analytical state of mind that observes its object one-pointedly and gives rise to the bliss of pliancy is meditative serenity. When analytical meditation that rides the mount of serenity by its own power gives rise to pliancy, spatial insight is attained. Since it perceives particularly, it is qualified as a special insight. Outline 4. Some assert that while serenity's clarity aspect lacks intensity, insight does have it, which is incorrect, because the difference lies in the persons or absence of laxity, and serenity too must be free of laxity. We are on page number 84. All meditative states free of laxity are guaranteed to have the aspect of mental brightness, whether it is a serenity or insight that meditates on emptiness. It must realize emptiness, however. Non-discursive meditative states do not necessarily realize emptiness. You should know that both states of concentration that are not directly toward emptiness and states of concentration realizing emptiness issue from blissful, clear non-discursiveness. Having achieved serenity, the wisdom analyzing reality is free of the fault of instability. Furthermore, analytical meditation on all topics requiring it avoid the fault of excessive instability with regard to those objects, rendering potent whatever virtue you perform. We're page number 85. How to train in each? How to train in meditative serenity, how to train in spiritual insight, and how to unite the two. The first is three, and the first one residing in a harmonious place with five good qualities, having few desires, containment, few activities, and pure ethical discipline, as well as rejecting thoughts of desire, are the requisites for serenity. On that basis, how to meditate serenity, the preparatory piece. Meditate the preparatory topics, the spirit of enlightenment, and so forth, the central phase in what physical posture to meditate. Maintain the physical posture with eight characteristics. The explanation of the meditative process. We are on page number 86. The first one, possessing joy and bliss, you are physically satisfied and have the visible result that is happiness. Since pliancy has been achieved, your mind can be directed to virtue. As uncontrolled distraction towards incorrect objects has been appeased, misbehavior does not occur. Your virtue is potent, and you soon attain super-knowledges and supernormal powers. Realizing insight into the profound, you overcome rebirth in samsara. To sum up, whatever you meditate, see the virtues of concentration, and are by them, faith will arise. From faith arises aspiration, and from it enthusiasm. From it arises pliancy, which puts a complete stop to the laziness. This weakens concentration. Second, what to do while focusing on the object. The four general objects are universal objects, those purifying behavior, those of skill, those purifying kleshas. The first, in particular, the object for those with strong attachment is ugliness. For those with strong discursiveness, it is their breathing. Furthermore, examine the way in relation to the objects of attainment, etc. Attachment and so forth arise with great, average, or lesser intensity, so as to discern the remedies that reject attainment and the rest. Identifying objects in the present context. When discursiveness is dominant, breathing is a good object. As taking the body of Tathagata, etc. as an object, serves many purposes, practice that. Absorbing repeatedly an excellent likeness of the guy's body, retain its characteristics. This serves to make a mental image of the Buddha appear. On page number 87. Visualize it in your mind as the actual Buddha. To facilitate it appearing to you, start by meditating on the Buddha's general features. When this is stable, meditate on the details. Switching objects of meditation precludes achieving serenity. Visualizing several times sequentially the head, the two arms, the torso, and the two legs. In the end, when you can get a general image in your mind of the whole body advance and distinguish the features roughly from head to foot with the limbs, although it may not be clear and include the radiance, you should continue yourself with that as you have found the object. Then, wanting to make it clearer, you can visualize it again and again. It may become clearer but will hinder your concentration. Although it may not be very clear, if the object is unmistaken, You will achieve concentration soon and attain clarity easily. At this stage, if the color, shape, size, or number of the object of meditation changes, you do not allow it. But unerringly maintain the initial object. This is of great importance. If no matter what you do, it is difficult to get an image of the deity to appear, place your mind on any of the other objects mentioned earlier, or on the view ascertaining emptiness and keep it there, as the priority is to achieve serenity. How to focus the mind on it? The first one, the two traits of concentration to have are great mental brightness, the brightness expect with intensity, and the non-discursive stability expect that abides one-pointedly on the object, whatever it may be. Some adding bliss and clarity as at full. However, clarity is achieved by brightness, and the bliss is not necessary at that point. Therefore, as explained above, it is certain that it is two traits. Laxity hinders the achievement of intense brightness. Excitement towards one-pointed non-discursiveness. So, having identified the contrary conditions, coarse and subtle laxity and excitement, price relying on the favorable conditions of remembrance and watchfulness. We are on page number 88. Having pictured the previously ascertained object of meditation, it is said that intense remembrance ties the mind to the object and keeps the mind from being distracted to other objects. Thus, there are three traits to remember to remembrance in this context. The concern is object, motive apprehension, and function. Furthermore, as explained before, once you have found the object of meditation, the mind holds it, thinking, my mind is tied to the object. Once you have heightened the intense motive apprehension without analyzing anything further, maintaining the strength of that state of mind uninterruptedly is the instruction on how to rely on remembrance. When cultivating concentration, meditation's main aspect is the cultivation of remembrance. As for remembrance, the aspect of its mode of apprehension is recollection. And recollection's mode of apprehension is tight, otherwise, although clarity may be achieved, the clarity aspect will lack intensity. Those who believe in objectless meditation too must assert a distraction-free form of meditation, in which case the way of meditating remembrance without distraction and without losing the object of meditation, it is said, does not differ. Some believe that according to the above instruction on remembrance, although there is no laxity, there is a great risk of excitement. And I have seen them assert, good meditation arises from good relaxation, which is a case of mistaking the presence of laxity for meditation. Some think that since the clarity aspect is present, there is no fault, but in this case, mistake lies in not distinguishing lethargy from laxity. Therefore, the wise and the interested should guard like their life the explanation of the right degree of looseness and tension at the point where you think if a heightened excitement will arise. If you must loosen a decree at the point where you think, if I leave it like this, laxity will arise. You heighten it a degree. You will know how to place your mind by observing it intelligently without letting the mode of apprehension of remembrance decline. Watchfulness just checks, observing and watching from a corner of the mind whether or not the root object is still maintained and whether or not laxity or excitement have arisen. Before the intensity of the initial state of mind runs out, we are in page number 89. From time to time, neither too seldom nor too often, check it, and similarly from time to time, recall the original observed object. Meditating thus with strong remembrance, you will be conscious of laxity and excitement. If you do not follow this instruction on remembrance and meditate for long periods, your wisdom will deteriorate and your forgetfulness increase considerably. Understand the expression, the mind recites the object again and again, to mean that remembrance maintains it without forgetting it. When you still have the fault of weak watchfulness, which fails to quickly identify the forgetfulness that tends to distraction, as well as laxity and excitement, the instruction is to meditate on frequent but short meditation sessions. Once you have overcome both faults, you may prolong the sessions slightly. Calculating an hour as one meditation session or half a session as half a session remain as long as you are able, adapting to your personal mental capacity without forcing yourself meditating while rejecting the obstacles. What to do once focus on the object. By nature, excitement derives from attachment. Its object is pleasant and attractive. The aspect of its mode of apprehension is unpeaceful and scattered. It engages in its objects with the aspect of craving. On page number 90, its particular function and role is to interfere with the mind, remaining fixed on the object. As the laxity, which is either virtuous or ethically neutral, does not tightly apprehend the object. Although there is clarity, the brightness lacks intensity. Lethargy is either a non-virtuous or an ethically neutral obstruction. It is a cause of laxity and derives from ignorance. It is physical and mental heaviness and unserviceability. How to produce watchfulness that perceives them when meditating? When you see that laxity or excitement are about to arise, if you do not apply strong watchfulness, just knowing that laxity and excitement are will be useless. Thus, there are two means to sustain watchfulness. As explained before, one is to rely on remembrance continually. The other is from within that state to watch alertly from a corner of your mind and check whether the mind has scattered from its object to another. These are the two instructions for applying watchfulness. For just a strong remembrance is a cause of watchfulness, so is checking repeatedly from a corner of your mind a cause. Applying the attitude to non-exertion in rejecting them despite their identification. Just as by the power of a magnet, a piece of metal moves, what moves the mind towards virtue, non-virtue, and ethically neutral is the mental factor of intention. In this context, a direct application, intention is the remedy for non-assertion when laxity and excitement occur. Since laxity arises when the mind is turned too far inward and has loosened its apprehension of the object of meditation, it is by meditating joy, not sadness, that you overcome it. Hence, by analyzing desired objects, deities and images of light, and with joy, afflict your mind. Raise and increase your apprehension of the object. Go walking, perform recitation, meditate on the six topics of recollection. Contemplate the benefits of the spirit of enlightenment and of freedom and fortune. Stop the causes of laxity and meditate on whatever supports clarity. Excitement, art of attachment runs after objects. In this case, meditating impermanence, renunciation, disillusionment, and so forth will automatically calm excitement. When mental scattering predominates, the instruction is to bring the mind back immediately. When excitement prevails, it is also appropriate to draw the mind inwards at once. Not guarding the senses, not eating with measure, sleeping, lacking enthusiasm, and not exercising watchfulness are the causes common to both laxity and excitement. The causes of laxity are excessive sleep, or doing the practice of meditating serenity, remaining in a fog, and not delighting in maintaining the object of meditation. The causes of excitement are a lack of disenchantment, unfamiliarity with enthusiasm, and excessively right mode of apprehension, and being distracted by your homeland and loved ones. When laxity and excitement are about to arise, you must stop them. If you fail to do so, playing them down because of their subtlety, your concentration will be faulty. When mental scattering and excitement arise, seek stability within. When stable, if you suspect laxity, generate intense brightness. Do not content yourself with simple clarity. It is difficult to balance this quickly. However, through habit, it becomes easier. What to do when laxity and excitement are absent? Once you feel confident that for the duration of a session, laxity and excitement will not occur, meditate with non-application and less exertion without letting the intensity of your apprehension decline. At the preliminary stage, laziness, when striving to concentrate, it is forgetting the instruction. When in meditative equipoise, there are laxity and excitement. When laxity and excitement occurs, it is non-exertion. When free of laxity and excitement, it is application, and these are the five faults. The four, faith, aspiration, assertion, and pliancy, were page number 92. Contract laziness, the four, the remembrance, the watchfulness, application, equanimity, respectively, contract forgetfulness, laxity, and excitement, non-application and application. Thus, the eight applications contract the five faults. Be aware that these are needed in the highest yoga tantra as well. On that basis, the process of producing the mental states, first placement, continual placement, renewed placement, close placement, subjugation, pacification, complete pacification, one-pointed attention, and balance absorption are the nine to be cultivated. We are on page number 94. Last paragraph. On the basis of serenity explaining how to travel the spiritual path in general, furthermore, both non-Buddhists and Buddhists and all yogis of the three Buddhist vehicles. Must first rely on these to achieve the different kinds of spiritual insight, those with the aspect of coldness and calmness, those that reject manifest kalashas in their seats, those of the 18 constituents, those that discern characteristic, those having the aspect of truths and so forth. Consequently, as explained earlier, serenity is called the preparation allowing all. As regards insight with the aspect of calmness and coarseness, Buddhists also practice it, but it is not required. Non-Buddhists do not have the insight into the truth, etc. Page number 95. Practitioners of the generation stage phase in highest yoga 2 achieve serenity, but not for the purpose of achieving insight with the aspect of calmness and coarseness. Explaining in particular how to travel the mundane path from the ninth mental state up to the attention is called beginner in attention. From the attainment of attention up to the discernment of characteristics, it is called the beginner in purification of kalashas. This is explained in the listener's level. Thus, the initial preparatory phase and discernment of characteristics are not simultaneous. If the two were posited as concomitant, then there could be serenity without prior concentrative meditation, and serenity will occur prior to the preparatory phase. The certain explanation of the gateway to serenity, the nature of the perfection of concentration, is complete. How to train in spiritual insight? Once you have studied the authoritative works of Nagarjuna and Aryadeva, the commentaries and the commentaries of these, establishing the excellent view within you with the intelligence that distinguishes definitive meaning from provisional, is the vital requisite for spiritual insight. Consequently, taking as a base the works of Buddhapalita and Chandrakriti, relate to them the deep and particular contents of all other excellent treatises on the profound. In particular, the way to establish the view, when page number 96, not established by conception since beginless time, but apprehended as established unto itself by view of its own nature, is the mode of apprehending true existence, the object to be refuted. Its conceived object is called self or nature. Its basis are persons and phenomena, and in relation to them, refutation of the two are the two kinds of selflessness. The two thoughts conceiving the existence of these objects in relation to the two kinds of basis are the two kinds of grasping ourself, although some Matamikas and Chittamatrins maintain that the object of grasping at the self of person is the mere I. When asked for an illustration of the mere I, some say that it is the mind basis of all, others that it is the mental consciousness and so on. According to present Prasangika system, the mere I, that is object, giving rise to the mere thought I am, is asserted to be the object. The aggregates are not considered to be illustrations of it, even for a second, which is a unique feature of this system. Similarly, the object of the innate thought, this is mine, in just mine as well. And it is said that one's eye, ears, and so on are not to be considered to be mine. If something is the object of innate view of transitory, it must spontaneously give rise to the thought, I or mine, hence Devadatta's perception apprehending Kratu as intrinsically established is not a view of the transitory, but is a case of innate grasping at itself. The objects of innate grasping at the cell of phenomena are the form aggregate, eyes, ears, the world as container, and so on. The aspect of grasping at both the self of persons and of phenomena is the mode of apprehension as established intrinsically. For that reason, neither of these is the mere imputation as permanent, unitary, and independent, or of the perceived and the perceiver as having distinct substance as imputed by reasoning, for they do not arise under the influence of faulty tenets. And those born as animals or many eons also have them, thus they are known as innate grasping itself. The transitory view is the root of samsara, and grasping at the aggregates, true existence is the root of samsara. If you ask, does that not then make two distinct roots of samsara, that the latter is the cause and the former is result? Although their objects are distinct, they share the same mode of apprehension. So the fault that you raise does not apply to me. It is the same for two successive moments of ignorance, for example, which according to your system should be seen as the root of samsara. Since the transitory view is considered to be ignorance, and grasping at true existence, there is no fault. When by ignorance an object is held to truly exist, and the object in question does not coincide with your way of thinking, anger arises in relation to it. When it coincides with your way of thinking, attachment arises. When neutral, neither of the two arises, but another moment of ignorance does. The way the rest arises is explained in the intermediate being's path. So this is a kind of the summary presentation of the two truths as being presented in the summarized or the concise version of Lamrim. Wanting to reject grasping itself, seeking the view of selflessness. Since it is said that if you perceive the selflessness of the object, you neutralize the seat of cyclic existence. If you properly refute the object, it is perceived by grasping itself, you neutralize all false kaleshas. Just as cutting the root of a tree destroys its branches and leaves, therefore, if you disregard the path that opposes the mode of apprehension of the root of samsara, innate grasping itself, no other path, will eradicate the seat of the view of self. Without a mind familiarizing itself with two kinds of selflessness, it is not possible to talk of realizing selflessness. As rejecting is not like extracting a thorn. In brief, by understanding and meditating on the lack of true existence, grasping at true existence is overcome. The wrong thinking, that is a kind of an incorrect attention, is thereby overcome. By overcoming it, attachment and so forth that are rooted in the view of self are overcome. Then the karmas that they inspire are overcome. Without karma, you are no longer obliged to be born in samsara and are certain to attain liberation. How to generate the view realizing selflessness? Ascertaining the selflessness of objects on the basis of images is easy. On the basis of other objects, it is not. Similarly, realizing the lack of intrinsic nature on the basis of person is easy. On the basis of phenomena, it is not. As in the case of similes, it depends on the base. For this reason, according to the order of what is easier, is this in this way, when you have realized the person's lack of intrinsic nature, apply that knowledge accordingly to all other phenomena. Thus it is explained, making the order of meditation certain. The actual process of successively producing the two views, be they ordinary beings or Aryas, all beings exist solely as a mere I, imputed to its basis, the aggregates. From that reason, the aggregates are the basis of imputation, and the person is what is imputed, as explained clearly in the sutras. As its basis of imputation is not the thing imputed, the view of the aggregates is not the view of the self or persons. When it is said that the view of the self perceives the aggregates, it is to refute the idea that the substance of the self is distinct from the aggregates.
Page number 100, the second bearer. Although from the perspective of a direct perception, apprehending it, it exists unmistakably. From the perspective of refuting true existence, it is taught that nirvana too is like an illusion. Similarly, although something appears to a perception, it does not exist intrinsically. The way it appears, since persons, forms and sounds and so on, combine appearance and emptiness, the appearance, it is thought, is like an illusion. Although empty agents and actions do exist, hence existence is not completely denied. Phenomena are entirely devoid of intrinsic existence. Since this is known, it is not a mind's invention. It is true of all, not just some noble entities. As it is established by mind, it is a suitable object for a mind. Since it can be discovered by a mind understanding emptiness, it is noble. However, it does not truly exist. It is said to be like an illusion. If you wonder, if direct perception can establish that reflections, dreams and magical illusions and so forth does not exist as they appear, does that fact not make ordinary beings Aryas? Establishing that the reflection of a face magically produces horses and elephants, and houses that appear in dreams are not, actual houses and so on, does not mean you have established their emptiness. Nevertheless, as explained earlier, these are used as concordant examples. Subtle emptiness on the basis of this object is the fact that they do not exist in the way they appear. This course appearance contradict. Their existing truly, this can be established by contemplation. After realizing the lack of intrinsic existence using these familiar examples of falseness, you realize it in relation to phenomena not known to be false. Thus, the order of realization is certain. The example, then, the meaning, the realizer of one thinks, is the realizer of all things emptiness. The meaning of this statement is that when emptiness is first realized, it is enough to change the orientation to other objects, and it can be realized in relation to them. As for direct realization, the real view is that it realizes simultaneously. Understanding that reflections magically produce horses and elephants and houses and dreams are not real does not allow for even a partial awareness of their lack of intrinsic existence. Second outline. Without ascertaining the measure of the object to be negated, explained earlier, some say that since objects broken down by reasoning are not found, the mind of the analyzer is similar. And the one who ascertains it as not findable must also not exist at all. Nothing can be ascertained as existing or non-existing. Various hazy appearances arise. These are nihilistic equipoises and post-equipoises which demolish interdependence. Not meditating the instruction that neutralizes the object to be negated, and instead meditating for long periods on there being nothing, after which meditation things appear like smoke on rainbows, flimsy, inconsistent, and vague, such equipoise and post-equipoise just neutralize coarse, obstructive things. Whoever by valid cognition has established the relationship of the two, the lack of the slightest intrinsic existence and cause and effect, and perceived them as perfectly compatible, has discovered the profound path. Page number 102. Second outline, establishing the selflessness of phenomena. Next in meditation, the selflessness of phenomena is established by applying the previously explained argument to it. Neutralization by another reasoning, not previously explained. Page number 103. Moreover, results not produced in reliance, and things which parts not reliant on their parts do not exist. By analyzing what arises in dependence and what is named in dependence as being intrinsically either one with or distinct from what they depend upon, reveal true existence.
Material the
So today, since today is the Mahaparinirvana of Lama Tsongkhapa's, so maybe it would be nice if you recite the first chapter of Abhisamaya Alamkara and also the first chapter of Supplement to Middle Way by Chandrakriti. So how long it will take, and approximately? Maybe in 15 minutes we can complete. And as Lama Tsongkhapa has himself has studied very extensively the Paramita text, and of course composed very relevant texts, and also Madhyamika philosophy. The great learning centers, whether it is Sakya, Kagyu, or any tradition. So Abhisamaya Alamkara is a common text that is being studied by all, and also supplement to Madhyamika philosophy, Madhyamika Avataranama is also a common text being studied by all. And also, when we study the Madhyamika philosophy and while giving the teachings, first we are taught to memorize or read the root text, the fundamental of the middle way, then the 400 verses, and so on. And Abhisamaya Alamkara is a text that we all have by our heart. And I have a friend from Ladakh who went to Tibet and study in Tashilumbu Monastery for many years. And he has memorized the Abhisamaya Alamkara by heart. And one of his Dhamma friends, since there is no philosophical studies back at his Ladakh monastery, so but after coming back to Ladakh, there is no work for Abhisamaya Alamkara texts because they do not study the debate and the philosophical systems. And even myself also, I used to recite the Guru Puja daily. But Guru Puja is something that we all recite. But Abhisamaya Alamkara is a text that is being recited and studied only by the scholars who study Buddhist philosophical studies. So maybe the whole text, the eighth chapter, will not be completed, but we will recite the first chapter.